it will be a very emotive debate. Do you foresee difficulty in this getting through the Houses of the Oireachtas?
It's always, it's, let me put it another way before I even start. Ireland has seen so many changes. We've seen marriage equality, same-sex marriage. We've seen divorce. We've seen abortion. We've had all of these difficult conversations. This is the next step, and this is something Ireland is ready for.
Good evening, Mike. Good evening, Dr. E. Michael Jones.
Good evening, Gemma. Good to be here. Great.
Well, it's great to have you back. It's been a little while since we spoke, but I was really keen to get your views on that lady, in inverted commas there, who she just happens to be Jewish. That's a coincidence, of course. But she's planning, now that they've brought divorce, gay marriage and abortion to Ireland, now they want to go the next step and bring in euthanasia. How come it's always the Jews that are behind these things, Mike?
Because this is their religion, and they are very zealous in spreading their religion. So abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. 400 Jewish organizations have said that. And I don't know how many sacraments they have, but abortion is one of them. And it looks as if euthanasia is another one. Both of these involve killing people. Killing people at the very beginning of the spectrum of life and killing people at the very end of the spectrum of life. And then if you're concerned about the middle spectrum, well, they will kill people there too if they happen to be Palestinians. So the word is getting out now. These people are involved in murder. They don't believe in the sanctity of human life. They may not believe that people other than Jews are human beings. And so they have a right to kill them. But now that neither you nor I could have put it better than this lady put it. You know, okay, you guys bought into abortion. You bought into gay marriage. You bought into divorce. And now this is the next step. This is brilliant. I couldn't have said it better myself. If you get involved with any of those things, there's a Jewish lady waiting in the wings to introduce the next step, and this means killing old people. That's the agenda. This is the Jewish religion, and it's being imposed on Ireland.
Well, I mean, I don't know what more proof people should need, because she actually heads up, and now she doesn't have an Irish accent. She claims to be Irish. But she heads up an NGO whose sole purpose is to bring in euthanasia in Ireland, which I would say most Irish people don't want. In the same way, they didn't want abortion. There was no demand for it. But some Jew got an idea into their head that Ireland needed abortion, facilitated through the Irish Times, of course, which is now fundamentally an organ of Jewish propaganda. But, I mean, the proof is there, right?
Well, you have to go. There's a World Jewish Congress video where we have another Jewish lady, younger than this one, and she begins by saying, Jews are always right. And, well, what do you mean by that? And then she goes through the whole list we just went through. Abortion. The Jews were involved in promoting abortion. The Jews promoted gay marriage. All of these things that are so wonderful for the world that we live in, the Jews are behind them all. I couldn't have done a better piece of anti-Jewish propaganda if you asked me. The World Jewish Congress put that out. So they are, what should I say? They're revealing their true spirit before our eyes. And if we're too stupid to see it, we deserve everything we get. I mean, how much more obvious can you be?
And coming into a Catholic country like Ireland, okay, Catholic in name only at this stage, but still with a long Catholic legacy, you know, really the audacity of it. But of course, they control everything. They control the financial system. They control all the NGOs, all of big pharma and big tech. So they're running the country, but people refuse to believe it. But it's only thanks to the majority of Irish people who go along with it. You know, she comes across as so humane, and this is about releasing people from their suffering. What is it really about, Mike?
It's about control. It's about total Jewish control of your culture. And that's how it happened. Now, we, the United people of the United States, are way in advance of this. And I watched it happen. I watched it happen 60 years ago. 60 years ago, I was in a high school, Christian Brothers High School. I have the same education as James Joyce. I have Christian Brothers and Jesuits. And this was a Christian Brothers High School in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And there were all of these women's religious orders who had girls going to their school. And that's when sexual liberation hit. 64 was a year of the birth control pill. And then it just got more, the drumbeat increased during that period of time. And by this time, let's say 65, 66, the young ladies, the young Catholic ladies were starting to act out. And when you start to act out, the chances are you're going to get pregnant. And when you're pregnant, then you're not married and you're in a situation like this, you're faced with another temptation, and that is abortion. And a lot of these people turn to abortion over this period. I'm not going to limit it to that. It began then, but if you take the next 10 years, you had this devastating effect on Catholic morality in places like Philadelphia, which had a large Catholic population. And I'm saying, it took me a while to figure this out. But I mean, when the Jews said abortion was a fundamental Jewish value, I started thinking along these lines. And I realized these ladies became Jews when they had an abortion. That is why abortion is so important for the Jews. Because when you have an abortion and you don't repent, obviously, if you're a Catholic, you can go to confession. But a lot of ladies don't. And if they don't, then you become a Jew. But no one says it that way. What the word is feminism. Feminism was a Jewish operation. It was basically people like Betty Friedan, whose original maiden name was Betty Goldstein, who was a member of the Communist Party, who took class conflict and transposed it to the family. And now you have man against woman in the family. Okay, and this became a fundamental Jewish value, and it became a way that the Jews colonized the minds of the Catholic woman, and they became a Jew. How do I know that they became a Jew? Because they became feminist, and that's a Jewish political movement. That's like Bolshevism. And then after that, they voted like Jews. And the classic example of that is Josh Shapiro. He's the governor of Pennsylvania. There aren't enough Jews in Pennsylvania to get elected to any office. You couldn't be elected dog catcher. But if you drag in all of those Catholic ladies who had abortion, suddenly you've got a powerful force. And that is one of the driving forces behind the Democratic Party. That's the way they take over your culture. That's why abortion is so important. And then once you get to open the door to that, then she said it. Every other step follows naturally from that. So if you do abortion, well, then you've got to approve gay marriage. And if you do gay marriage, then you have to approve euthanasia, and the whole plan is right there in front of you, and you will end up a complete slave to your Jewish masters.
And it begins with family breakdown, which is what we should rename divorce. Divorce isn't the right term really at all. It's about family breakdown. And we've actually published the findings of, and I mean, there have been plenty of these studies, a lot of them hidden, but how children of divorce, they never recover. And as much as the parents often like to promote the idea that the divorce is the best thing for the children, you know, because they're not going to be witnessing squabbling or rows. Now, I don't think either of us would agree, Mike, that where there is physical violence or any sort of abuse, that any child should be subjected to that, or any man or woman should be. But the church allows for that. But it is the finality, the ending of marriage, so that a person can go off and start another, a second family, which causes so much trauma and damage to the original child. But the point of this article is that children of divorce often go on to have catastrophic relationships, are much more likely to abort their own children. And you just see the tsunami of after effects. All of the evils that the Jews have brought in, many of them go on to become lesbians or gays because they just can't have a stable relationship. So in Ireland, it started with divorce. And it's very hard, I'd say, for Americans or English people to appreciate the idea that, for example, someone like me who grew up in the 70s and 80s, none of my peers, not one of my peers, was in a broken family. There was no divorce.
Right.
And, you know, thanks be to God, it hasn't caught on in the way that they hoped it would. But that's inconceivable for an American or an English person to see, that we didn't have any marriage breakup. You know, there may have been some separations, annulments, but in general, the family was intact. And that makes such a difference to a society.
Yeah. No, it did happen here. It happened. It was immediately after World War II. I think it was one of the consequences of the destruction of sexual morality that took place. It always takes place in war. War always has a bad effect on sexual morality. And you had 11 million soldiers coming home who had bad experiences in Europe, oftentimes involved in rape and prostitution, who come back and they've got problems now. And so the solution is, okay, well, let's allow divorce. So that was the early 50s. When it started, the drumbeat started for that, for divorce here. To give people credit, though, I mean, these were new techniques that hadn't been. Divorce was not all that subtle. It wasn't all that new. But over this period of time, the techniques became more sophisticated. And I think that that's what happened to the Irish. I mean, suddenly they were confronted. This happened over a long period of time in America. Let's say from gay marriage, what was that? What was gay marriage? That was just about 10 years ago, 6 years ago. So let's say from 1950 to 2010. That's 60 years. Well, the Ireland had it all compressed in a very short period of time compared to that. And yeah, it was compressed and promoted with a sophistication that simply did not happen in the United States of America. And I'm talking about the NGOs. Nobody knew what an NGO was. Nobody knew that you could have these quasi-governmental entities. So it's called non-government, okay? All that means is basically you have no redress. We are ruled by non-government or governmental organizations. Google is obviously a non-governmental organization that has the power of a government. Google has more power in Ireland than the Irish government has. It's obvious. And we had this problem in the United States with tax-exempt foundations. They became extremely powerful. All tax-exempt groups will become extremely powerful. The Knights Templar were a tax-exempt foundation that became more powerful than any government in Europe during the Middle Ages. Okay, so you had the same type of thing happening in the United States with the fortunes of the big manufacturing families like Ford, Carnegie, and Rockefeller. They were the three biggest foundations. The Ford was the biggest of all of them. And they didn't pay taxes. Well, your money accumulates exponentially when you don't pay taxes and you're getting compound interest, which is how they invest their money. And so by the 1950s, the government had to call in these people and address this issue. These tax-exempt foundations were crucial in the United States in the subversion of the sexual morality of the American people. And I'm talking specifically about the Rockefeller Foundation's connection with Alfred Kinsey, the entomologist who was the author of the Kinsey Report, who had a devastating effect on sexual morality. The Congress tried to address that at that point, and it got shut down. There was a guy by the name of Ohio, Wayne Hayes, was absolutely irrational in trying to shut this down. Well, it turns out Wayne Hayes has a secretary who doesn't have a type, but she's really good looking. And that's his girlfriend. And Kinsey interviewed him. And so they had all of this blackmail material on Wayne Hayes, and he shut down the Reese Commission. And so we did not deal with tax exempt foundations. And because we did not deal with them, we now have the NGO problem, which is basically they have the power of government and none of the accountability of government. That's the best of both worlds from their point of view, and it's the worst of both worlds from our point of view.
Also in Ireland, we had the mainstream media who started around the probably mid-90s telling us night and day that we were the most repressed people on the planet, that we were sexually repressed because of the Catholic Church. We were sexually repressed because we stayed within the unit of marriage that we believe is a divine institution. We were sexually repressed because we believed it was wrong for man and wife to separate, because it would impact on all sorts of things. I mean, obviously it would impact on the well-being, mental and physical, of the child, but also property rights. It would have broader implications for society. Divorce is not just about, oh, he's not satisfying me anymore, so I'm just going to call it a day on this marriage. It has implications for broader society. And so because of the combination of media and NGOs, the propaganda was so intense that the Irish did start to believe that they were somehow backward, when I would argue they were much more progressive, in fact, because they kept their passions, understanding that passions and lust and all of those things are not healthy, they're vices. And, they tried to be loyal to their faith. But the media has rewritten our history completely.
Yeah, and they exactly what happened in New York, which was the forerunner of national abortion in America. It was the two Jews. It was Bernard Nathanson, who eventually converted to Catholicism and repudiated abortion, and Lawrence later. And the New York Times was involved. And whenever the New York Times would talk about abortion, they would always identify the opponent as Catholic. They would never identify the proponent as Jewish. Never, never. Whenever they referred to Bernard Nathanson, he was a gynecologist. And when it's gynecology, oh, that's science, right? And science is real. I mean, I walk around my neighborhood. They have signs outside their houses saying science is real. So you better do what Tony Fauci says, because otherwise you're saying science is not real. This is exactly the toxic combination that allow it to happen in New York. That was the thin end of the wedge in New York. The same thing happened in Germany. Absolutely the same thing, where Kinsey got transported over to Germany. And he's on the cover of every single illustrated magazine, which was the cutting edge of communication technology at that point. And as soon as you're talking about this, well, this is science, but you can bring in now the lady with the bare breast, because that's science too. So it immediately broke down the censorship because it was science. Same thing happened in the United States. Exactly the same thing. So who's the guy who's really inspired by Kinsey? Well, it's Hugh Hefner. And he created a magazine about 2 years, after the female volume came out, 53. No, same year. Okay, same year the female volume. He creates a magazine called Playboy. And Playboy is about, this is cutting edge because it's glossy photos, and that's the technological cutting edge at that point. Same thing as in Germany. And that he runs this thing based on Kinsey's destabilization of the foundations of sexual morality. One thing we don't know, Hugh Hefner was a Methodist, okay? He was the only non-Jew at Playboy. Every other position was a Jew. It was a Jewish operation from top to bottom, but they need the goy there, the Shabbos goy, as the front man to distract your attention from the fact that the Jews were always involved in pornography. This is just softcore pornography that leads gradually to the erosion of modesty and sexual morality. But it was also a way of telling those veterans, those soldiers who came back from the war, they're divorced now. So Hefner comes in with his magazine and says, I'm going to tell you how to spend your money. And it became a propaganda because these men now were earning a family wage because of basically people like Monsignor Ryan in the Catholic Church in the 1930s. because Ford capitulated to the unions. Wages were never higher than they were in the 1950s. You break up the family. These were guys that probably handed their paycheck over to their wife and maybe got $5 to buy cigarettes for the rest of the week or something like that. That's now broken now, and now you have first access to all that money that should have been going to the family. And that's how Playboy became a lifestyle advisor for these people. The Playboy philosophy was written by a Jew. He put Hefner's name on it, but it was basically Jewish liberation, justifying all of the things that you wanted to do to wreck your family, and now you can spend your money, and this Jew's going to justify it. That's Playboy. That's the whole story there.
Yeah, and the sort of modern day equivalent of it is, you know, for example, the weekends in all of our countries now, America, UK, Ireland, it's just all about sport. So the man is completely taken up with sport. And on every street corner, you've got bookies, you know, so they're going in and they're squandering, you know, the family's money and got drinking. And, you know, over the next few days, we're going to see once again on the international stage the mortification of the Irish people in this Patrick's Day festival. They don't even call him Saint Patrick anymore, Paddy's Day. So all of these distractions that are thrown in the way of men to take them away from their role as the head of the family. And
yeah, I witnessed it in Grays Ferry. That's an Irish colony in Philadelphia. I just wrote John Cardinal Crowell and the Cultural Revolution. Mike Rafferty, the boxer, the Irishman, brings me down there, and I'm sitting in a bar trying to persuade the guy next to me to buy a copy of the book. Well, he says, "How much does it cost?" I said, $25. "Oh, that's too much. I put $50 on the Phillies." So he's betting the money away. He's drinking the money away, but he won't buy my book because, and so as a result, what? You're a slave to sports. If there ever needed proof, it was Grays Ferry. But let's not get carried away here. Mike Rafferty did a show with me just a few weeks ago where he said Grays Ferry did not die. I mean, the Irish Catholic Grays Ferry is still there, and it's heading in the opposite direction. The other good news is the referendum in Ireland. Okay, I think that that's really good news. I think that's a sign that the tide has turned. And I'm not just telling, I'm talking about the referendum that was supposed to redefine the family so that we don't talk about man and woman and husband and wife. We talk about partners and we talk about blah, blah, blah. That was repudiated by the Irish people. And that's a sign that the tide has turned. I think it would be foolish of us to ignore that.
No, it's definitely an indicator. I mean, I have my reservations. They rig everything. They lie to us about everything, the government and their media. So I just don't believe that everything is rotten except the electoral system. So I need some convincing there. But I do definitely believe that there is a vast, there's definitely a massive change back towards, I'd rather call it Catholicism, but I believe it's more conservatism. The Irish people don't realize that it is Catholicism that they are yearning for, the faith of their fathers. They don't want to call it Catholicism because that's a dirty word now, but they want to be far right. They want to be conservative, but they have the whole infrastructure and it's in their DNA of the church. And the church is bouncing back in Ireland. You know, it's like there is a countercultural revolution happening. We talk about it every time we talk, but it's getting closer and closer and closer. And I think because all of these things have happened so recently, the gay marriage, divorce, abortion, and this latest nonsense and the euthanasia coming down the track, you know, really it's very superficial. It hasn't been allowed to embed into the society like it has in the US and UK. So we maybe have been saved from a lot of it, Mike.
Sorry. No, I think you should take credit for it. I know you're too modest to do this, but you have been beating this drum for a long time. And I think that Logos is rising in Ireland. I think they're finally waking up to the fact that sexual liberation is a form of control. I wrote a book about that. It came out 20 years ago. And it turns out that it takes a while before people start to understand that. I just talked to Jason Whitlock. I don't know whether you saw that story where Jason, a black guy, sports guy, had me on.
Explain to our listeners.
Well, anyway, he invites me on. He doesn't know who I am. He invites me on because everybody on his show is saying you got to have E. Michael Jones on. So he's a black guy who doesn't go along with this kind of black racial agenda. Is willing to defend. He said that one of these Serbs in the NBA, the Basketball Association, he should have won the most valuable player, and he didn't get it because he's a Serb. And they call Serbs white guys over in America. So he's willing to say that kind of stuff. So he has me on, and we start to have a meeting of the minds here because I know a little. He wants to talk about sexual liberation and political control. This is the first time he's had it. He flashes up my book, and he said to me, didn't say it that particular time, but he said to me later, he said, once you hear that, you can't forget it. Once you understand that concept, it becomes so self-evident that you'll never change. The world has changed, and you will never forget it. Well, that's what happened in our conversation. The dime dropped. I started talking about early instances of the Black Jewish Alliance, which no one even supposed to know about. I talked about the Jews founding the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of the Colored People, as a form of control. Around the same time, they created the Harlem Renaissance, which created jazz as a form of control. First of all, to get the Negro culture making that normative for the white culture. And then and making sure that you understood that it would involve sexual deviance. All of these things were happening. I talked to him, and all you have to do, it's up, you can find it if you type his name and my name in, watch his face. You can tell that this made sense to this guy, and he got grief because of that. Complete attack, seven news magazine articles within 24 hours, all saying the same thing. It was totally cut and paste journalism. Jason Whitlock interviews notorious anti-Semite E. Michael Jones. And he was taboo. He incurred ritual impurity because of that, because this is the Jewish religion. This is the way the Jewish religion works. And then he has to apologize and grovel. And he does to a certain extent, you know, to retain his job, but the mind is not going along with it. He understands what happened. It's his business, what he does at that point. But I'm saying that consciousness rises and it doesn't go back. So if you understand that, you can never go back. You may be weak. You may have all of have succumbed to temptation in the past and so on and so forth. But once your mind understands that, you will never go back to the way you were. You will never go back. And sometimes people just convert like that. They get over bad habits simply because they have a clear understanding of what's involved here, which is slavery. A man has as many masters as he has vices. And I'm saying this is the same consciousness that is rising in Ireland. You had your experience. Are you happy now? Are you happier now because you can kill your child or because two homosexuals can get married? Are you happier now? No, I don't think so. And this referendum was a sign that people are waking up. They're not going to go along with this anymore.
Yeah, but it does. And I would like to thank you, Mike, because I think you're far more responsible for this change. And, you know, I know that you've helped so many young Irishmen, young American men. And you've brought them back to the Catholic faith. You know, there's no question. You have a much harder job in America, obviously, than we do in Ireland. But we are definitely seeing that change. And it is thanks to you. Like, do you see the fruits of your work, I'm sure. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who contact you and tell you that they've returned to the faith or they've converted. And they're no longer atheist. mean, you probably don't tell us about a lot of these situations, but I'm sure you're seeing it the whole time.
I see it on a regular basis. People just out of the blue. You have no idea who you're affecting when you're talking in conversations like this. And people will write to me and they'll say to me, you know, I understood what you said. I stopped. I broke my masturbation pornography habit. I cleaned up my act. I got married and I now have a child and I have a real life now. I've gotten innumerable letters like that from people all over the world, because we now have a reach, even with all the ADL trying to stop us from reaching any audience. We do have this reach, and people, Jews have converted to Catholicism because they read the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. I've gotten letters from people like that. So we shouldn't underestimate the power that truth has. That's the crucial difference. I mean, they can have billions of dollars to promote lies, but in the end, the truth is going to prevail and not the lie. That's what's happening. That's what's happening now. I think we're seeing it now. Whether how far it goes, it's easier in a sense in Ireland because you were all Catholics to begin with, and you just go back to the church you left. In America, we had this anti-Catholic Protestant attitude that is hard for these people to deal with. It's just like you lose your identity when you become a Catholic. You're no longer an American in some sense of the word. It has a really strong hold on people, and it has to basically, sometimes they just say to me, when I understood what you said, my entire world fell apart. Well, that's what it's like in America, because it was the Protestants that created this world, and though all of the heroes, I'm dealing with this now. This is the book that I'm writing now. I got an email from a guy who said his family came over to America in 1683. Obviously one of the early Puritan families. He said, well, and then I listened to you and I became a Catholic. So I know what it means to be a Catholic. I don't know what it means to be an American anymore. And that's the topic that I'm writing about, because we're in a period of total social collapse right now. The Frenchman, I did that review of that book by Emmanuel Todt. He said the American empire is collapsing because Protestantism evaporated. And Protestantism was the form of America, and the form holds everything together, and it tells you how to behave. If you break the form, you unleash violence. And the best example is the atom. The atom is the form that holds this matter together. When you break that form, you have an atom bomb, and you release all this negative energy, and that's what we're seeing now, both globally, like in the Ukraine, in Gaza, and locally, video after video of fistfights and people getting beaten up in schools, beaten up in spring break, the whole thing. That's a classic example of what I'm talking about. The New York is descending into anarchy, and so you not have a cop, not a cop, a soldier on the platform, because the form has evaporated. The form has disappeared, and the form tells you how to act. And when there's no form, you don't know how to act. It just becomes violence. That's what's happening.
This is just horrendous. I mean, this is a complete breach of your most fundamental rights, but they now have the National Guard. I mean, a lot of this, they obviously, you know, order out of chaos. They created the chaos. They caused all this social mayhem in order to bring in, I mean, they don't even have local police. They have the National Guard checking your bags when you get on the New York subway now. But I was listening to some Protestants discussing this story over the weekend, you know, and they were like appalled by it. And I'm thinking, well, what happened to New York? What happened to it? You're Protestant, but you will not admit what happened to it. And it is that it abandoned its Catholic values, Italian, Irish, Catholic values.
That's right. There was the Irish Catholics were dominant in New York for a while. I'll give you a reference point. Charles Ives, the American composer, was on a subway platform in, I think, when the Lusitania went down. What was that, 1913, 14, something like that? When the word spread on the platform, everybody started to sing in the Sweet By and By. Everybody knew that song. It's a Protestant hymn. Everybody knew the words, and everybody just spontaneously, that was the spontaneous reaction of these people when something bad happened, when people died. They all did that and made a huge impression on the composer, Charles Ives. That's the culture. That's the reference point we need to have to understand what you just showed on the screen. Now you have to have soldiers in there on the same subway platform. They haven't changed. That's the other problem with New York City. All the infrastructure is going down the drain, okay? But the physical infrastructure, the collapse of the physical infrastructure is symptomatic of the collapse of the spiritual infrastructure that's taken place. And now you have to have people there because some guy will come up to you and shove you onto the tracks. This is what they have to prevent now. Well, how did that happen? The form collapsed. The form that told you how to behave, the form that told you that people don't shove other people onto the tracks when a subway car is coming along. You would think that would be pretty basic, wouldn't you? You'd also think it would be pretty basic that you don't kill women and children with F-16s by dropping bombs on them in Gaza and then pretend that you're the victim, which is what the Jews are doing in Israel right now. All of this stuff has disappeared. It has evaporated, largely because of Jewish influence in the United States and the corruption of morals that these people are compelled to engage in.
Sometimes, Mike, when you talk about growing up in Philadelphia, I can almost just not bear to listen to it because it's so painful to think of what has been lost. And you talk about the identity of the different Catholic, the migrants coming in, be they Polish, Irish, predominantly probably Italian, and how everything worked so brilliantly around the Catholic parishes. Talk to us about that. And, you know, now we are here. This, and the same was with in New York and Boston and Chicago, all the big Irish Catholic cities. And you've explained it so well as to how, you know, they were the halcyon days. Okay, they weren't perfect.
No.
But
No, I've said it before. When I was
good 14, as it could have got.
When I was 14 years old, I went to the 4th of July celebration at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, where the Declaration of Independence was signed. And there was a Catholic mayor on the platform, Catholic governor, and a Catholic president of the United States, John F. Kennedy. And at this point, the ruling class, the other two ethnic groups, the Protestants and the Jews, but more the Protestants in Philadelphia, they decided we cannot allow these people to take over our country, our Protestant country. And so they declared war. And I'm talking specifically ethnic guerrilla warfare in Philadelphia. And the way they did it was similar to Ireland. They got black people. They brought black people in. They didn't have to go to Africa. They brought them up from North and South Carolina. And these people engaged in ethnic warfare against the Catholic ethnics, the Irish. So up until 1954, we lived in an Irish parish. And then the blacks crossed Lehigh Avenue, and then everybody left, and they went to the suburbs where you became white. You were no longer Irish, you were white. It wasn't technically a suburb, but that's what it was. They destroyed Philadelphia. I don't have to prove that. Type in Philadelphia just in Twitter. See what you see. You see the fentanyl zombies or the crank zombies. What are they called? Crank? Yeah. Trank zombies, or they're shooting up animal tranquilizers on Kensington Avenue. They're literally zombies. They're hanging like this. That was a working class neighborhood. Both my wife's family and my family, my mother's family, came from that neighborhood when it was a working class neighborhood, and a man could raise a family on a factory job, a salary from a factory. All that was destroyed, and it was deliberately destroyed to prevent the Catholics from taking over Philadelphia. And if you extrapolate from that, and that's what happened to the United States of America, because they murdered the Catholic president. That wasn't a lone deranged gunman. That was a coup d'etat of the same sort that I just described in Philadelphia. and it was the same group of people. It was the CIA. Talk to Robert Kennedy, because his uncle, his father died. His uncle died first. His father, Robert Kennedy, was going to run for president. And when he got became president, he was going to turn the government upside down to find out who killed his brother. And that's why they had to kill Robert Kennedy. And Robert Kennedy Jr. knows that. And so, great, he had a compelling campaign slogan, okay? He was going to avenge his father. Well, that's visceral. That's basic. We can understand that. And so what happens? Rabbi Shmuley shows up. And Kennedy is completely absorbed into the group that killed his father, his uncle and his father. His uncle, let's just say his uncle. The Israel... Kennedy was not, John F. Kennedy was not going to allow Israel to have the atomic bomb. That's why the Israelis were involved in his killing. It's that simple. And now Kennedy, a man who showed some type of heroism in opposing the vaccines, has now become a pawn of the Jews once again. One more, I don't mean once again, I mean one more candidate.
Yeah. Just another, that book, the book that it's Baron Metal, is it? Is Baron? No, no. It's the other book of yours that where you talk about the, sorry, I'm going back to our conversation about Philly and Boston. And
if you want the story of Philadelphia, what happened in Philadelphia, it's called John Cardinal Kroll and the Cultural Revolution. And that was a turning point in my life because I got access to the archives of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. So this is the raw material. This is not some hack writing a pseudo history. This is the real stuff. And that's where I learned about all of the stuff that we're talking about, other stuff as well, including the Legion of Decency story. That's all in there. This is crucial archival material turned into a book that is the history of Philadelphia and the history in large measure of the Catholic Church. Because Kroll was intimately involved in the Second Vatican Council as well. There was one, I'll just give you one answer. There was one, there was an Irish neighborhood. It was Most Blessed Sacrament Parish. It was densely populated, row houses. So 125 families to a block, block after block. And it was a square mile. And they had so many people they could elect their own representative, their own state senator. To Harrisburg, to the state assembly. That man's name was Martin Mullen. Martin Mullen held up the entire budget bill of the state of Pennsylvania for one reason in 1964, because at that point, the state was going to get involved in the promotion of contraception. And he became public enemy number one, and that was another motivation for the WASP elites from Chestnut Hill and Bryn Mawr and all those places to destroy the Catholic Church, destroy the Catholic neighborhood. And so from 1966 to 1976, what you had was the ethnic cleansing of Most Blessed Sacrament Parish. The blacks came streaming in. The Catholics were driven into Delaware County, where they're dispersed. It's still the most Catholic county in Pennsylvania, but they can't elect their own representative. And that political power was destroyed. And the tragedy here is, I'm telling this to Cardinal Kroll. I mean, Cardinal Kroll is an old man now. And you talk to him in the afternoon, he's non compos mentis. Okay, had something to do with his liver and toxins building up in the brain. But in the morning, you talk to him, and he's kind of conscious. I said, well, look what happened to Most Blessed Sacrament Parish. That was the source of more vocations than any other parish in the diocese, the archdiocese. And I said, don't you think you should have done something to prevent that? And he said to me, you can't tell people where to live. Completely missed. The whole, I mean, all right. I'm the first guy who ever said that what happened in Philadelphia was ethnic cleansing. I am the first guy, and it didn't come out until the book came out. So in a sense, he didn't not have the benefit of that, but now it's out. And in a sense, it did work with Grays Ferry. So in spite of that loser who was sitting on his bar stool in the bar in Grays Ferry, I think the message got to Grays Ferry. And the Irish are now resisting. The Irish Catholics of Grays Ferry. And I think the same thing is happening to Ireland. I think that they have buyer's remorse. They understand that they got swindled. They got hornswoggled with those referenda, and now it's heading in the opposite direction. And once you change, this is what Jason Whitlock said, once you understand it, you can't go back. That is the force of logos in human history.
Very true, very true. Before, because you have to leave us a bit earlier this evening, but before you go, Mike, what would you say to people as we approach this really important feast day this weekend? And, you know, it's all about our identity as Catholics, and it has been so degraded. And, you know, even like the Irish people are so disrespectful towards their patron saint, who brought them the gospel, who brought them everything that was great about Ireland. What would you say? I know there is a change, but I mean, still predominantly the drunkenness that will go on all around the world this weekend using St. Patrick. I mean, when we were young, St. Patrick's Day was a day of abstinence in Ireland. The pubs were closed. It was and it still is a holy day of obligation in Ireland. Well, it's Sunday this year, but we will go to Mass on Monday. But I mean, it's just devastating, really. What would you say?
Well, it's there. He's still there. St. Patrick hasn't changed. He's still a saint. He's still in heaven. It's your perception of St. Patrick that has changed, and you need to change your. He's still there. He still wants to protect Ireland. He still wants to drive the snakes out of Ireland. He's still there. I'm saying that's exactly what I said before about the church. It's still there. It hasn't gone away. You haven't destroyed something irrevocably by your sins and by your stupidity and by your vices, whether it's alcohol or sex or whatever it is. Are you happy when you wake up with that hangover? No. Well, then there's still the same possibility is there, because the church is never going to change. Kroll told me that. He said, it's like the moon. The church is like the moon. It never changes. But from our perspective, sometimes it disappears. But that's only a function of our perception. It's still there. And all the grace is still waiting for those people to return and understand the real basis of Ireland.
Yeah, well, let's try and aim for a sober St. Patrick's weekend. Let's just try. And let's try and regain our reputation as Irish people and people of, you know,
as the people who brought Christianity to the Germans, with the Irish monks who sailed down the Danube and founded all of those monasteries along the way and brought the Catholic faith to the Germanic people. I should know, because I'm half Irish and half German, so I have both sides to thank. The one side thanking the other side. It's still there. It's being refined into something else. It'll never be the same. We'll never have that world again. But there's another world that's waiting to be born.
There is. Yes. Yeah. And something to look forward to. Definitely. I mean, the young people, they're craving for it. You know, we see it. So it is happening. It's just painful, you know, that it's taking maybe a bit longer than we would hope, but it is happening. It is happening. Michael, thank you so much. As always, please come back soon.
Thank you, Emma.
Very, very happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And we'll talk on the other side of it.
Thank you. Thank you, Gemma.
Okay. God bless.